It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. We can never seem to get five people here at once. It's always four. This week, I guess Toyota-thon is a hell of a thing, so Josh will not be joining us again. But we do have Jason here for the first time in a little bit. So welcome back, Jason. We missed you.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be here.
We're all working for a living, Brian. Sometimes you just can't make it.
Well, understood.
And we'd like to say welcome back to the voice of the podcast over there. Sounding good?
The voice has returned. Vocal therapy has been very good to me. I still have a paralyzed vocal cord, but I sound probably about 90% of my old self. So depending on the day, depending on the time, I sound pretty good. So going to keep it going. I was just telling everyone before we started recording about the little vocal exercises that I have to do where I have to go, ooh, and blow bubbles into a cup of water and do little singing simple songs. And it's like I'm a full-on vocal performer now. That's what I got to do to keep my paralyzed vocal cord from staying paralyzed. It's very odd, but it works. It really works. Jumping into the technical side of things, there's a lot that's happened in the last few weeks that we haven't had a chance to discuss, but we're going to do that now. So both Josh and I made the jump into a Logitech Circle doorbell. I did mine as soon as they came out. I was actually still in the hospital when they were first released, and I went ahead and bought it immediately because I wanted to get rid of Ring. I think Josh did it a little bit after me, but he installed his first. I had to get an electrician to come out and do mine because I didn't have a wired doorbell. It was quite a discussion in my household to get everybody on board to running the wiring and making sure that it didn't look bad. And I think my electrician did a fantastic job considering the constraints he was working under. We were able to put the transformer in the wall behind a single gang wall plate. It's very down low. It looks like an outlet with no holes on it. And we went through the back of the light switch next to the front door. So it's a little over to the side further than I like. But just like with Ring, they have sort of a wedge you can put in there. And with the wedge, I'm able to see the entire area. You know, it has its strengths and weaknesses. One of the things I've never done inside of HomeKit is enable facial recognition. So if you have cameras that support HomeKit, you can tell it to look in your photo library, which again, stored on device, and it figures out who's who. After you do that, you know, you go to the door. If I ring the door, if I go out to get a package, you get a notification that says, you know, if someone's at the door, that appears to be Brian Baggett. And if you ring the doorbell, all of your HomePods will chime. So you don't need a chime. If you have one, it's great. You can use it, but all your HomePods will chime. And if facial recognition is on, it'll even announce who's at the door. You know, I was watching Apple TV a couple weeks ago with something, and Whole Foods came and delivered groceries. And as soon as the doorbell rang, what I'm watching is interrupted with an on-screen message with a live video feed. So it's been very neat. If I had any downsides to this thing, is that and it's not really a downside, but it does not do a widescreen picture. Instead, what they've opted to do is to do instead of landscape, they do portrait mode. So it's kind of like looking through an iPhone. The rationale is most of the time when you're looking at this, you're going to be looking at it on an iPhone. Now, yes, you can look at it on a Mac or something, and that's fine, or Apple TV, but it's going to be sort of a vertical picture. And it gives you, you know, if you have packages that are down low, it helps see them. It also does not do infrared. You know, a lot of times with the Ring and other doorbells at night, if it's dark, you see the black and white image. This does sort of a faux color type of image, and maybe I'll try to do a screenshot tonight to send to you guys so you can see what I'm talking about. Now, it does have like this 4,000 lumen LED that it will shine a light if you wanted to, and it is obnoxiously bright. Like, Josh was complaining about it, and I'm like, how bad could it be?
4,000 lumens is like daylight.
It's ridiculous. You can see it from like eight houses away. It's only the size of a strip. Like, it's no bigger than, I don't even know how to compare it. It's just a slit in the doorbell. It's not very big at all. But it's obnoxiously bright, so I turned it off. And even without that, what I did was I enabled an automation, because it has a motion sensor. If something triggers the people detection or the animal detection, turn on the front porch lights, and that'll light the thing. So, I figured I didn't need that. Though I am considering getting a Philips Hue outdoor motion sensor and putting it there, because the motion sensor for the doorbell, I can catch even... Okay, this is another downside. The zones and HomeKit don't work very well. So I'll tell it, you know, just look for in front of my front door, and I see people jogging down my street, and it's like, I see a person, there's a person out there, and it's like, that's, yeah, but they're running in the opposite direction, and they're nowhere near, they're 30 feet away from my door, and no matter how I've tried to tweak the zone, it doesn't get it, so I'll probably turn that off a little bit, and just leave the, I'll let a Hue motion sensor above the door that's sort of catty-cornered, looking down, figure out if I actually have motion or not. I think that'll be the best thing. I have to get another one anyway for my back door, so I'm gonna do that, but I would highly, highly recommend this to anyone who's looking to ditch Ring, because it's HomeKit only. When you go to set this up, there is no Logitech app. It is done entirely from within the HomeKit. It has a USB-C port on the bottom, so you can power it with a battery pack if you have one. If you want to see, like if you're like me and you didn't have a doorbell there before, not a permanent doorbell, I had a Ring, you know, battery powered. I wanted to see what the field of vision was going to look like. I wanted to see before we started drilling holes in brick how this was going to work. And it was really useful to have that, to be able to see. You know, at $200, it's not a very pricey doorbell. And, you know, if you're an Apple One subscriber, as I am, you get 2 terabytes of storage anyway. It records everything to your iCloud, your HomeKit secure video. So you're not up in Ring's cloud. You don't have to worry about, you know, somebody sharing your video feed with the police or other security bungles that Ring keeps inexplicably having over and over and over, where they're just getting very social with your video feeds. Those belong to me. That's the way I view it.
They've actually announced that this week that, like, twice the number of police stations have subscribed up to the Ring service or whatever, as from what they released last time. They were talking about that on Tech Meme Ride Home.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, if you want to do that, that's great. But it's kind of like, it feels like Amazon is making choices on customers' behalf. Between that and the Ring sidewalk thing where they were sharing your Wi-Fi out. Like, it's, there's this notion that, you know, hey, this sharing is great. Well, not necessarily. And that's why I've sort of invested heavily in the Apple ecosystem and the HomeKit ecosystem. Simply because it's keeping everything within my house or within my HomeKit. I don't have to worry about, Apple's not going to turn around and do that. So that's a good thing. I don't want to monopolize the conversation, though. So I do have other things that I want to mention in this regard. But opinions, guys? Any thoughts? Any?
Well, I got a couple of comments. I don't know if you guys ever watched the show on ESPN PTI. There's always an errors portion at the end. Yours has a 4000K LED light bulb brightness. 4000 lumens could literally light up 1,000 yards, and you could actually see, you know, somebody smiling at the end of 1,000 yards. So
my bad, my bad. I misspoke. Thank you.
4,000K would be the color.
Actually,
yeah, 4,000K would be the color. That's right.
The other thing is, every time I hear you talk about this thing, I think of that terrible Tom Hanks, Emma Watson, social network movie called The Circle. And so, like, yeah, you're part of the circle now, and you talk about your privacy and whatnot, but now you've joined the circle.
In retrospect, Logitech should not have named all of their cameras Circle in that regard.
I've got a cheapo little blink that I mounted. My office is right at the front of the house, and I've got a big window here. So I mounted the blink here to where it shines right out to the front door. It's pretty neat, but one of the things I've got it set for notifications, but we end up going in and out right there a lot because we go out that door to the garage is a separate door. Like, we go out one and out into the other. And there's a fridge out in the garage too, where we keep a lot of stuff. So I end up with a lot of notifications, you know, and a lot of little recorded snippets. I think it would be neat if something like yours, where it could actually just tell it, ignore it if it's me, because you said it's like, you know, it can tell who it's looking at. It'd be really neat if you just said, hey, if it's Brian or Wendy, like, I don't need to know that they're, you know, that they're looking. It's, you know, I don't need any kind of notification, you know, but if it's the old ups, man, you know, please do.
Yeah, notification suppression would definitely be appreciated in certain cases. One of the things that I really don't like is that HomeKit has a limitation of 5 cameras that can be recording. Now, you can have as many as you want on your account that are streaming, but actually recording, they limit it to 5 cameras. I have 6 HomeKit cameras. Those Eufy or Eufy's or whatever, however the pronunciation is, Anchor, let's just call it what it is. Those cameras are fantastic. I love those. Those $40 2K cameras are the best. I've put them all over the place. They're cheap. They're reliable. They never go down. They work with HomeKit, or you can do them without HomeKit, and you can use SD storage. You can use a NAS. You can use whatever you want. But fantastic. I should put a link in the show notes for that. You cannot go wrong with these cameras. Love them.
I'm surprised Apple doesn't have like a HomeKit Plus subscription you can sign up to, sort of like CloudCam has for Amazon.
I'm sure that'll be next.
Where it's like, yeah, like you can have 2 cams, 3 cams, 5 cams, 10 cams, whatever.
Yeah, you know, your rave reviews on those, and especially when they put the deal for like 2 for $70 not too long ago.
It was two for 60.
So I sent a text message to my dad, and I was like, hey, buddy recommends these. Just go buy 4 right now. If we end up not liking them, like, you know, you can drop them off at Kohl's for the Amazon return and, you know, be done with it, right? So I call him like a week later and I'm like, hey man, you know, I said, I bought some too. I haven't had a chance to hook them up. And he was like, oh, they're great. I was like, what? He's like, oh, they're great. It's like, you hooked them up. Like, you're on the Wi-Fi. Oh, yeah. And I'm checking them all the time. And so I talked to him again tonight and I was like, hey, I still haven't hooked mine up. But, you know, are you still liking your cams? He's like, oh, they're great. He's like, I ordered four more. So in a matter of 2 weeks, my 67-year-old dad ordered 8 UFI cams and loves them.
That is amazing because they are good. If I'm going to buy something that's cheap, I want to buy something that's cheap in HomeKit. I don't, you know, and you can't.
Oh, I was even more impressed that he went and bought SD cards for them. Because like one of their problems that he's had complaints with at his house is, you know, they live way out in the country and their upload bandwidth is 1 megabit. Okay. So, like Arlo's half the time wouldn't upload at all because they require a minimum of 1 meg up. He wasn't able to use a Ring doorbell because it didn't have enough bandwidth to get up. I mean, like it needs a full 1 meg. And so, I mean, if mom's doing anything on the iPad, you know, that 1 meg up is gone. So with the SD card, it records local, but if it doesn't have a good Wi-Fi connection or whatever, he wants to see snapshots of who's there. So if he's gotten not great reception, it puts it on the SD card and then can wait until he's got a good signal, and then it sends him a push notification of, you know, whatever movement there was. And so he freaking loves it. And I got to say, I love it because I haven't touched mine, and the man has installed 8 of them at his house.
It's truly impressive how good these cameras are. It's almost criminal. I do want to go in. I did read on some of the forums that on some of the Pi-hole forums, actually, that they do try to ping a certain DNS in China. And people, if you block it, the cameras don't work well or something. I'm just thinking I could reroute them in Pi-hole to make the Chinese DNS be my DNS, and who would know the difference? You know, it thinks it succeeded, and then it never makes it out of, you know, the U.S., and we're good. But I'm not overly concerned about that because I turned off the regular stuff and turned on HomeKit, and that should buy me, theoretically, a little more security. So at least that's good. There's one more story I want to tell about HomeKit. So I've had some issues with my Ecobee thermostats where they would go out of control. They would just, I used to keep the temperature on the auto setting between hot and cold and just say, keep it in this range. Worked very well. You could even have 2 degrees in between them. It's perfect. Well, you know, being in the hospital for a long period of time, my wife decided she was just going to turn on the heat because it is oddly cold here in Georgia right now. She set it to 73. Well, she goes out and she comes back and it's 85 in the house. It's not supposed to do that, obviously. So, you know, at first I thought, oh, this is a wiring issue. A quick trip to Reddit later, I see this is a common thing that seems to happen with Ecobee and some Nest thermostats. It's something to do with a software update they did, something with, you know, the learning capability that you cannot disable in the Ecobees. At least you can't in mine. Yeah, this was a big problem. So I was like, I'm going to screw this. I'm just going to rip them out. I've had them for 4 years. They've served me well, but it's time to use something else. So I asked Jim what he recommended. Oh, get these Lyric T5s. They're great.
He's like, what's the dumb ones Jim's got?
Yeah, what's the dumb smart thermostats that Jim has? And they supported HomeKit. I'm like, all right, cool. And I could kick myself for not, again, heading to Reddit first and doing a little reading, because apparently these thermostats are notorious for allegedly supporting HomeKit, but not really supporting HomeKit. So, you know, you go through and it takes forever to set them up. First of all. So we get that done, and then I get them into HomeKit, and then they go unresponsive.
Well, they are dumb, Brian.
Well, they are smart thermostats. You can do things with them. You can set up geofences. You can set up schedules. Unlike the Ecobee, you can actually turn off these things, right? You can make them dumb or you can make them smart, which is good. Well, having them go unresponsive in HomeKit is a problem for me because I have lots of scenes that I set up in automations that adjust the temperature on a regular basis. So it kind of is important. You know, I'm not touching them all the time, but when I do, they need to be responsive. Not an unreasonable thing. You know, when I got home out of the hospital, I also built a HomeBridge server. And sure enough, Josh had recommended this plugin for the Lyric thermostats. And I'm like, why would you have a plugin for something that exists inside of HomeKit? Well, I quickly figured out why. Because the guy who wrote this plugin use the developer API for the Lyric thermostats, and now I have more granular control. I can control the fans and whatnot on the units as well, where I couldn't before with the official Honeywell support. These are actually much nicer. They never go unresponsive. Do I hate? Does it irk me to have to use Homebridge to use something that's natively HomeKit supported? Yes. Does it work? Yes. While we're on the topic of Homebridge, I also put in the Ring plugin again, and that's been working fantastic. I only have one Ring camera left, which is my floodlight, the backyard cam, because nobody makes a decent floodlight cam other than Ring right now. There's not a HomeKit one that I would use. Arlo made one, and I'm just not, you have to use their video recording. You can't use HomeKit Secure Video, and they charge a fee for it. So really not interested in that. But I'm able to see my parents' Ring doorbell and their backyard cam from hundreds of miles away as part of my single pane of glass inside a HomeKit. It works really great.
Well, I this week took my first foray into Homebridge, and I have kicked myself. I think you guys have heard me for multiple years complain on this very podcast that I could not control my Nest thermostats with Siri. And that drove me nuts, right? That was the only thing in the house that I had to keep Alexa devices around for. And so Brian, in his infinite wisdom, was able to create me a Raspberry Pi image, put it on an Apple Pi Baker IMG file.
60 gigabyte IMG file, by the way.
Yes. Put it in the cloud. I downloaded it, expanded the IMG file out, stuck it right into my Raspberry Pi, and I instantly had PyVPN running, I had PyHole running, and I had Homebridge running. And speaking of which, the WireGuard PyVPN setup is amazing. I love it. And now also in HomeKit, I can see my Ring cameras and I can see my Unify cameras. Although the Unify Homebridge plugin doesn't work for me, I ended up having to use like a generic FFmpeg.
Yeah. Dang.
But overall, I've been super pleased with it. Looking at all the queries that are getting knocked down in PyHole is just great. Websites render so much faster and cleaner. Like some sites like Washington Post or New York Times or whatever, or New York Post, like those would just have so many ads that you just couldn't read them. And
if you read newspapers online, PyHole is an essential device. I do like the fact that I was able to actually put your actual IP that you were going to use, configure your gateway, do everything. And then just as soon as you load the image, it just works for you. As long as everything's plugged in and you're good, you're fine.
Yeah, it was great.
And it was only that big of an image because we were using 64 gig SD cards. I think it was the smallest one that I had on hand. I would have used a 16 gig if I had one. But yeah, and the thing is, you don't want to. It won't let you take a 60 gig image and put it on a 32 gig SD card, even though it's 90% empty space. I don't know why they can't do that. You should be able to resize it just fine. It's not actually, there's no data on that. I mean, it's ridiculous, but whatever. I mean, it worked. We're all on gigabit, so who cares?
I have a 256 gigabyte little card for the new Raspberry Pi I just built. And y'all had told me about the Pi Baker, and I put it in there, and I did everything, and it was awesome. And then a couple days later, I got this error on my, or not error, but message on my Mac that I was running low on storage. And I was like, what the hell? I'm like, I should be running. I've got a gigabyte or a terabyte SSD in my MacBook Pro. And I've never come close to, totally maxing it out.
Oh, and the Raspi automatically expands it when you reboot.
And so I fired up whatever this app I've got that like tells you where everything's used. And I realized I made that backup and I copied it to my big external like 10 terabyte hard drive. But I didn't move it. So I still had this 256 gig backup of the card on the Mac hard drive. And so that, left me with, I don't know, it put me all the way up to like 80% or something, whatever it was. But just because that file was so massive.
You know, what you really should do in situations like that is have a 16 gig laying around and use that for your base install and then, write it to a 256 gig SD when you restore it, because Raspberry Pi, the Raspbian, will automatically extend it out to the maximum size of the disk. So they really should put something in Pi Baker that actually has better compression, so all those sparse files or create it as a sparse image or whatever it is they have to do where it doesn't take up all that space, because that's it's insane what it does. But But yeah, it's been a nice thing to be able to create an image of what you want to be able to use. If something breaks, you can quickly restore it. And, you know, you're off and running again in no time. But I actually put my Pi VPN and my Pi hole on a separate... I have like four Raspberry Pi 4s now or something, like ridiculous. I have one sitting right here that's completely unused that I forgot about. That was apparently my VPN last year, but then, you know, somehow stopped working. So I'm just tripping over Raspberry Pis right now. So I'll have to find another use for that. So, Jim, you wanted to talk about the new feature in the 14.5 beta. Are you running the 14.5 beta, Jim?
I'm tempted to. I thought that was really neat, and I haven't heard anything bad about the betas yet. So the feature is basically, the way I understand it, if you are wearing a mask, because you have to be wearing a mask for it to work, and you have an iPhone and you have an Apple Watch, in the 14.5 beta, it will use what is similar to what the watch can be used to unlock your Mac to unlock your phone. So instead of, you know, it popping up a they did make the change recently that, you know, it detects if you're in a mask and it doesn't even, you know, try to figure out who you are. It just pops up the keypad and says, hey, log in, right? So what this is supposed to do is use that proximity type feature between your watch and your phone to unlock your phone if you're wearing the mask, which I thought was pretty neat. One of the little stories I saw on it said that while it sounds like, you know, hey, we can just kind of copy exactly what's on the Mac and it should be an easy feature to implement, the issue with this was that this was originally meant to go the only go the other direction, to use your watch or your phone to unlock your watch, you know, that go that away, not the other way around. So now if you look at your phone, you've got a mask on, instead of using the Face ID, it will say, you know, do you have an unlocked watch, you know, on you, and then unlock your phone, which I think is pretty neat. As somebody who, you know, it seems like it always comes back to Pokemon, right? Like you're walking around and you're playing Pokemon and you're doing anything and you got a mask on and, you know, you're doing something and you want to unlock your phone and you have to type in your password every damn time because you've got a mask on. It's super helpful. You know, this seems like, you know, super helpful. Or, you know, just walking around a grocery store, if you've got a list that you're trying to, you know, mark stuff off your list, walking around a grocery store or anything like that. And, you know, I've just got a habit of just clicking lock on my phone. You know, you've finished looking for you to click it, turn off the screen. And then, you know, you realize very quickly with the mask on that you have to keep typing. And I use a 6-digit passcode. So you have to keep typing that passcode every time. And so this seems really neat. I was going to wait, you know, I think it was just yesterday or, you know, over the weekend that the news came out about this. So, I was kind of waiting to make sure that nobody posted anything like, you know, you're not breaking anything else by putting this beta on your phone, but I haven't seen any other bad news. And it's just the phone. I don't have to do anything to my watch yet, which is, you know, we've talked about that in the past, where if you flash your watch with the beta, it makes it very hard to go back. But with the phone, I can go back if I want. So I might give it a try. You know, it'd probably be closer to the end of the week, so I'll give it a couple of more days. So we're recording on a Tuesday, you know, so by the end of the week, that's my dog squeaking a toy there, sorry.
That's my dog. That's my dog. That's my dog.
So by the end of the week, hopefully I can you know, give that a try if nobody says anything too bad about that beta.
Let's see. Jim actually redeemed himself after the thermostat debacle by finding us the best MagSafe stand that I have ever seen.
Hey, so the thermostats are nice once you get them working.
Yes, once they see Captain Alexa over here only ever does things using Amazon's infrastructure or the app,
which is solid.
It's like you don't you don't use HomeKit. You Apple
Alexa,
podcast
it
host.
Just works. Right, Jason?
And sends everything back to Bezos and the new CEO of Amazon.
Okay, so it's funny that you mentioned. So I got to take Jim's side on one thing right here. So he just did say Alexa just works, right? So is there a way?
It just started playing on my desk when I said that, like the It Just Works podcast, when I just said that on this podcast.
That's funny. is there a way to actually debug or troubleshoot what the hell HomePod thinks it heard and what the status was of what it did? So I can literally stand in front of my HomePod and say, hey, lady, turn on this light. And I can say it four times identically. And the fourth time she does it. I say it to Alexa once and she gets it every single time, like 100% of the time, never wrong. Also, the other thing that's so stupid in HomeKit is
I have
my kitchen and I have my breakfast room set up as two separate things, right? So I can individually say turn on kitchen or turn on breakfast. Well, if I use those with HomePod, 80% of the time they fail, right? But if I say turn on food, which is the combination of the two, they turn on 100% of the time.
I'm sure it has something to do with what you either name the rooms or the scenes or something like that. Like it's got to be something silly. Now, there is an app that alleges that it can do this, and I bought it the other day for $26. It's one that I saw Federico Vitici talk about. It's called Controller for HomeKit. And apparently, there are APIs that are available in HomeKit that Apple has built but don't actually use inside of the Home app. So this developer has gone in and utilized some of the APIs that now it's free to use, and I think you can do like a monthly subscription or something like that, or a lifetime for $27. And it was like, if this is as useful as I think it's going to be, one of the things that it claims to do is have logs that you can see when HomeKit stuff runs. I haven't tried it. Let me try it, and if it's worth it, I'll you know, give you the thumbs up, and if you want to buy it, you can buy it. But, you know, it alleges that you can do all sorts of crazy workflow stuff with this that, you know, is otherwise not possible. So that would, you know, anything that's automation related, I get intrigued by, and I have to try. So, but yeah, you have some unusually bad luck, because my stuff with the scenes actually works pretty good. I have one called Dialysis Days, and it, you know, I'll yell, hey Siri, Dialysis Days, and it'll, you know, turn on all my lights selectively, you know, see, it heard me and it did that. So, you know, it'll do things like that. Or
this recalls back to an old episode of ours where we talked about my granddad who supposedly could never wear a watch. And my grandmother said it was because he had too much electricity in his body.
See, Jim and Jason have all these weird issues that it's just like,
yeah, but the Amazon lady didn't have any problem with me. See, that's the, you know.
That's right, Gramps, because it's set up for the lowest common denominator.
But actually, around here, Megan has trouble with some of the devices where I don't. I think it's just because her voice is so low. And, you know, like, she'll say something twice and it won't do it. And then I just say it really loud and it works. And, yeah.
My HomePod can hear me. Well, I mean, I have them scattered all over the place, so they should. But I can just speak at a normal volume, and one of them is going to pick it up somewhere in the house and do what
and
needs
see,
to be done.
And see, mine have gone hard of hearing. Okay, so like when I first got the HomePods, when they first came out, man, like
I'm loving this.
This shit is not possible,
I could
Jason.
Whisper.
He goes, "Hey, lady." Right, she goes, "What's that you say?"
I could whisper at 15 yards away. Or, like, I could be upstairs and whisper, and the downstairs HomePod would pick it up. Now I can be standing literally a foot away and screaming, "Hey, lady!" Yeah, it's
is it turned on? You know, because there is an option where that's turned off. I mean, like, where the you can turn off the
listening for
the
Siri.
Hey, lady functionality. No, yeah, the listen
off,
thing.
Ever.
Try doing a factory reset. Every once in a while, you do have to do that. That is one of the downsides of the HomePods, is every once in a while, they benefit from a good factory reset.
A little colonoscopy for your,
Even if you don't factory reset and you just remove it from your Home app and then add it back, that'll
This is
that'll
nice. It's nice having somebody
wonders.
On my side. It's like, I mean,
two people who can't use
I
the
don't
easiest
mind,
thing in the world to use.
I don't mind
use.
My HomePod. I have it. It's sitting right behind me. I use it more here in my office than I do the Echo sitting on my desk. But everywhere else in the house is all Amazon.
The voice stuff is always good for a chuckle in our house because we have an Echo Show in our kitchen, and my wife will literally stand over it and say, "Lady, start a timer," and it won't do it. And she'll say it two or three more times, and then she goes, "F it," you know, and then nothing happens. And I'll be two rooms away, and I'm like, "Lady, start a timer for 10 minutes," and it does it.
All right, so then I have one more. I guess tonight's just Jason's get all his Apple rants off his chest, right?
Jason's gripe night.
Here's the other thing that's so weird. I'll say, "Hey, lady, play this song by Biggie Smalls," right? And she will play that one song and nothing else, which is the expected outcome that I asked her to play a song. She played the song. If I ask her to play Tupac, she plays that song and then more Tupac songs after that. Okay,
I've had that happen on my own.
Okay, but so here's the weird thing. If the song I ask for also exists in my iTunes match, it plays the same song twice.
Oh, that's weird. I didn't even realize iTunes match was still
a thing. So she's also a genre hog in that if I tell her to play Tupac, she will only play Tupac. Like if I say, "Play this specific song," then each subsequent song after that is Tupac. Okay. If I tell her to play Biggie and it's not in my iTunes match, it plays the one song. But if I tell her to play a country song, then she plays multiple country songs after that by different artists. There's no rhyme or reason behind it, other than, I can reproduce this problem 100% of the time.
Siri likes country and Western.
Both types of music, yeah.
Country and West Side.
Let's see. So you were talking about cases too, Jim. You've had some issues with cases.
Well, not really issues so much as, I think we've talked in the past about, Apple coming out with their proprietary stuff, like the Lightning connector. Everybody says, well, the reason Apple has the Lightning connector is because they control the Lightning connector. And, anybody who wants to make one has got to pay Apple some juice, to make a Lightning cable. And if it was USB-C, that wouldn't be the case, right? So, that's the story. So the story goes. Well, now with MagSafe cases, Apple has basically, like before, anybody could figure out the shape and make a case for an iPhone, and you've got an iPhone case, right? I mean, some people might license from Apple, and they're able to sell them in the Apple store, or, they get a fancy logo on the box or whatever. But really, anybody, and today even, anybody can make an iPhone case, and it might be really good, just depends on, what they put into it, right? Now, with MagSafe, you really have to license, that from Apple if you want to say that, that it's MagSafe ready, or, do something special with your case for that. So really, they've made it harder to find good third-party cases because basically the Apple ones are right now just infinitely better than any of the third-party, even the good third-party ones, because I used to always buy these cases. They were called Kung Fu Grip, and they're just really good iPhone cases. Wirecutter really liked them, and I bought one, a couple iPhones ago. And now every time I get a new phone, I buy this $10 to $15 Kung Fu Grip case, and they're great. And the one I have now is for all intents and purposes still as good as the last one, except my MagSafe stuff doesn't work great, with this case on it, because it's not enabled to be for that connection to be made through the case, and it's just kind of annoying. I'm a case junkie. I'll buy, have a couple of different colors and have a case that matches my watch or my tennis shoes that day, or, just have a change of pace, just change it out. And, so now if I want to be a case junkie, cases are $50 a pop. So that doesn't, I'm not going to do that. It's, I like the $15 cases, or even cheaper, but, $15 is not bad, off of Amazon. So, I think twofold Apple, you know, you got to think in the back of their mind, they're like, hey, if we make this, you know, it's a good, it's a great charging system. It, you know, it adds some functionality to the iPhone. And then some guy in the back is like, yeah. And now we can really force people to buy our cases for $50 a pop because, you know, they're going to want a MagSafe. And they're like, oh, yeah.
It's like a continuation of the dongle tax.
It's kind of like the dongle tax. Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
I'm going to do what I normally do and sort of play the devil's advocate in favor of Apple here for just a second. So what I like about this, what I do like about MagSafe and why I believe it's worth the trade-off is most of your wireless charging, the Qi charging sucks. So you have some Android phones that can top out at 10 watts. The iPhones always top that, I think, at like 7.5 watts max,
right,
with Qi charging. With the MagSafe, if you have the right 20-watt adapter, you can get 15 watts off of that. Now, from what I've read, it ramps up and it ramps down, so you're not getting it the full time. You know, whatever. It's fast. It's fast charging, basically. For me, I've noticed it's pretty quick. The good parts of having that MagSafe, especially when you pair them with the stand that Jim found.
Yeah, we can circle back to that now.
I will in just a second. I do need to mention that. The one big negative with MagSafe that I've seen is that having a big magnetic dongle on the back of your phone, when you go to take it off, it's annoying. And I have, you know, I bought a little wooden puck from Studio Neat, and the MagSafe comes out of it. So you go to lift it up, and it comes out of the thing that you put it in. Jim found a great stand. I'll link to it in the show notes. That is either a stand or it can lay flat, and it holds the MagSafe charger in place. So basically, you can put your phone down and pick it up, and not worry about bringing the charger with it.
Which is quite annoying.
One of the things that it will fix. The biggest common complaint I hear from the normie Apple users, the average Apple user, is strain relief. You know, the thing where they fray the Lightning cables. They fray their power cords. My power cord, my Lightning cord wore out. And that's not going to get any better with USB-C either, because they'll fray that too. It's the pulling in and the pulling out and the pulling in and the pulling out that tears those cords. And I've done it myself when I was, you know, again, to bring it back to my most recent experience, I had a meter-long USB-C to Lightning cable in the hospital that I've about ruined. I can only stick that Lightning cable in one way and actually have it charged. It, you know, again, I was inserting it and taking it out every time that I got moved from room to room or taken wherever. So I had a lot more strain relief on that thing than I did. And I didn't even fray the cord. I apparently did something to the tip of the thing. But, you know, it's bringing those in and out of phones wears out cables. That's probably the biggest frustration that they hear from customers anyway. Now, apparently, if you take in your official...
It's really the only friction point, right? It's the only,
on
a phone.
So, you know, we know that Apple's wanting to go portless for future phones. So I don't think this is just, hey, we're going to charge them. This is like the future. This is probably the future for the company, honestly, is I wouldn't.
Well, they've already said that they're expecting the MacBook Pros later this year to actually be able to charge with this too. Like slap it on the, like a spot on the back of your MacBook Pro to charge it. That would be really cool.
Put your MacBook like on a dock and like set it down sort of like as a VESA mount. Ooh.
Don't hold your breath for that one. But getting the power back and, you know, bringing back the old MagSafe for Macs would be great as well. But this is probably the future for charging iPhones or something very comparable where it's going to be magnetic and it's fast charging. It's the way to go. In fact, I think Skosh has a thing for the car now where you can put it in the cup holder and charge your phone this way. I mean, that hasn't been released yet, but it's coming out this spring. And that'll be great. I actually went and got a 20-watt Skosh power adapter for the car so that when I do end up plugging MagSafe into it, I'll get at least the 15 watts that I would get through fast charging. So now I can't close the tray on my cigarette lighter, but hey, it'll fast charge. So, you know, there are positives to this. I think the case makers are going to adapt pretty quickly, start sticking those in the cases by default. If you have it, it'll work great. If you don't have it, you'll never even notice that it's there. I do like the power indicator on the phone when you put it on the MagSafe and it gives you an entire dial instead of just you look up in the little right-hand corner. Is it charging? Is it not charging? You can't miss this.
That's such a satisfying dunk, that dunk sound, because if you have the sound turned on, it's just a great little sound when you pop it on there. I'll give you
that. It makes that sound when you put the little wallet on the back of your phone too.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I've almost exclusively used that wallet since Christmas now. And I really like it. I've still got my full wallet is like sitting on the table, you know, like inside the door where we set, you know, stuff. And if I'm going to be gone like for days, you know, I'll take my wallet. But, you know, if I'm just running out anywhere, it's just grab that little pack and it's got my like my Apple card in it, my card that we built, you know, put all of our food or purchases on or whatever, and my driver's license. And that's it. And it goes everywhere with me.
But yeah, it's probably the way that they're going to go. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure that they look at it like, hey, we're going to make extra off the case junkies. I think people like you and me are sort of in the minority on that. I think most people buy one case, and that's their case for the life of the phone.
You're right.
It, you know, wears out or something. Most people aren't going out and buying, I need a red case to go with my red Apple Watch band and my red shoes, and I need a tangerine one or a kumquat. I think kumquat is the one that I'm using now the most. So
yeah, so at least my wife like plays along with me, and so we actually bought two leather cases and two of the silicone cases, and in red and blue, both red and blue. So basically, I now have at least leather and silicone in red and blue that I can kind of swap out and
hotty toddy,
you know, and exactly, yeah. And then we have like the red or the blue wallet, and then the brown wallet. So
in a year's worth of owning, you know, doing the iPhone upgrade program, you know, I may go through three or four cases just because I'll find one that I like based on, you know, I just like it. Like there may be one that comes out and it's got Han Solo frozen in carbonite printed on the back of it or just some dumb crap like that.
Yeah. I mean, I love my Comfort Grip. I'll give them a shout out here. They're good cases and they're cheap. They just need to fix the MagSafe. I'll pay $5.
I think Apple changed the quality of leather that they use in their leather case. You know, I've had this one for, I don't know, 3 months, and it just hasn't gotten the patina that the, you know, previous models have gotten. And it's like really shaving off lots of the exterior leather. Like I always felt like my old cases got better looking as they aged, and this one's just getting ratty.
True. Yeah. I think it's because you never leave the house now.
That may be true too.
It's in your pocket less and everywhere else more.
Let's see. There's a couple more things I definitely wanted to get to before we finish up. So
did we actually talk about the stand?
So out of CES, there was a couple of things that were kind of cool. And one of those was a Kensington iPad stand called the Studio Dock. And I saw this thing. It's like, wow, that looks pretty neat. It's a magnetic dock and it has a charging pad for your phone and your AirPods Pro. I'm like, that's pretty slick. And it was like, sign up here to be notified when it's released. I'm like, yeah, why not? I plan on, because I've been iPadless since the fall. And when the new iPad Pro comes out, as expected in first quarter, I plan on jumping on that because I really miss my iPad. Reading comics on a phone sucks. So going and looking at this thing, I got an email today, and I almost deleted it, that was from Kensington. It's like, because you were interested, we're going to let you order a week early. I'm like, oh, cool. Let's see what, I forgot about this. Let's load it up. I loaded up. That thing is $400. $400 for an aluminum stand. I sent this in our Telegram chat so you can see what I'm talking about here. It ain't made of gold, folks. It's not.
It didn't even come with like a monitor or anything. That's just the
stand. It doesn't
have
a heated bidet built into it. It's just a stand with a magnet and a power thing. Like it's crazy expensive. Now, I like the aesthetic of it. I would love to have it. If it was $130, I'd pay it. But $400, good grief. I can't do that. I can't. Mm-mm. I'm mad at it now. On principle, I'm pissed off at it, if being $400.
All right, what's the over-under on how long after the new iPad comes out to when Brian owns one of these things?
I know me. I probably will. So
what does it? So I'm looking at it. It looks like it's at least got like chart. Does it have a base where it charges an iPods in the base?
Yes, you sit them at the base.
So it's not just a stand, but...
It's a stand with a charger in it, but it's like, it's not... You get...
Oh, and it's got the option... Oh, it's even optional. Wow, you don't even get the Apple Watch charger with it. You got to buy that option.
$400. That is an iPad in and of itself.
Oh, but Brian, it's got a headphone jack in the back.
Oh, my favorite. Because every pair of headphones I have, oh wait, no, they
and
don't.
And there's no guarantee that this model will work on the 2021 Q1 iPads.
It's going to work. It's going to be 12.9. They're not gonna screw with the form factor like they do. Yeah, they're not. No, it'll be fine. That would be a fine how do you do if they did, but
see, with
not.
The advent of everybody wearing masks, we might get that old Touch ID on the screen after all.
That Apple hasn't done that is going to be the biggest finally when they do that. They should have done that forever ago.
Well, I have that in my Samsung Galaxy Tab S6.
Exactly.
And it doesn't work for crap.
That's because Samsung made it, because they're garbage. They're good at making components for Apple.
One of the best purchases I've made lately is this. It's a 1 foot USB-C to HDMI cable that I've started using my iPad 12.9 inch for work all the time for Teams and whatnot. And it's great for, you know, 75% of the calls I do. But sometimes somebody's showing something on a deck and I want a, like a little bit better view or whatever. And so now with this little short little cable I bought, I can just plug that directly into the iPad and it project, you know, it turns on my 4K monitor here. And it's great. So it's basically, you know, just like having a duplicate monitor for my iPad. It's bigger, you know, so if, you know, if somebody is showing something, it's really neat. And I've, you know, I probably use it, you know, a couple of times a week now where I, you know, just kind of, it just stays in the HDMI slot on the back of my monitor because I don't have anything else plugged in there because I use Thunderbolt to drive the monitor normally. And so, you know, just plug it in and change the input and boom, I've got a, you know, a big display on my iPad. So that's
Jim is doing
nice.
Sidecar in reverse.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. One of the things that I did want to mention too, for people who are looking for a good portable streaming solution that are still in the Apple ecosystem, the Roku 4K streaming stick, I cannot recommend enough. So Roku has a terrible interface to be sure, but the two things that they've added in the last few months has been AirPlay 2. So they do AirPlay over Wi-Fi now, which makes the Roku show up in your home kit. You can turn it on and off with your home app, which is very neat. And it also has the TV Plus app. So you can access your entire iTunes library. You can watch all of the Apple TV Plus shows. It's pretty legit for a streaming stick. So as somebody who spent several months in a place where he was forced to use captive Wi-Fi, and by captive Wi-Fi, I mean you have to log into a portal, both the Chromecast, even the most recent Chromecast, which I bought one of those and quickly was disappointed, and the most recent, of course, the Apple TV doesn't do it either. These don't support portal-based Wi-Fi. So if you go to a hotel, a hospital, whatever, you can't use those devices in those places. So you're basically limited to a Fire Stick or a Roku. Well, I was forced to use a Fire Stick when I was in the hospital because I sent my wife to find the Roku, and she's like, I can't find it. And I'm like, it's plugged into the TV in the basement. I have her FaceTime me. I'm looking. It's like, I don't see it. But I could go into Unify, and I could see it on the network, and I could see it which AP it was attached to. So I knew it was in that general area. Couldn't find it for anything. I went to every room in the house, every TV in the house. Turns out that I guess my cleaning ladies had bumped it, and it fell off. It was still powered to USB to the wall, so it was still on the network and still getting updates. Like, it was still getting OS updates and all the other things. But it was under.
So you could see it, yes, on the network. It just wasn't plugged into the TV.
My Roku was gaslighting me. I was like, it has to be here. Like, it's on the, it even says Roku 4K Plus streaming stick in the thing. It's taunting me. Where is it? And it was under the TV hutch. So I just happened to find it when I was putting my dog's dog toys away. And I was like, oh, there it is. So I have reclaimed it. If I do have to go back into the hospital again unexpectedly, the Roku will be going with me so that I can AirPlay to the TV, or I can use my iTunes library a little bit easier. And of course, you know, both the Roku and the Fire Stick support the TV Plus app, so that's great. But basically, that means the Roku streaming stick is like a portable Apple TV because it has your AirPlay 2 and it has your entire library on it. So if you are looking for some solution and the Apple TV doesn't move you because I guess people aren't really traveling as much, but should you in the future need something that can deal with, you want to have a portable Apple TV, that thing is the closest thing you're going to come to until Apple finally breaks down and makes one.
What's one of those run? Brian, the 4K version
I
of the Roku?
I think it was like, I got it for like, I don't know, 50, 60 bucks, something like that. It wasn't terribly expensive. Maybe more than that. But
so I know you can get those Fire 4Ks.
If you get them on Black Friday, you get them for like
30
bucks.
Or 40 if they put them on sale.
And to be fair, they support the TV app as well. So you can watch your library, you just can't AirPlay to them. So it's, again, I know you stock up on the Amazon stuff because it's good and affordable. I do too. But the AirPlay...
Well, I'm sideloading stuff on my Fire Stick. That's the only reason I bought the Fire Stick is because I had a buddy that could hook me up on some sideloaded stuff. So
I went in and I sideloaded something on the Fire Stick in the hospital, but that was only because. But I didn't do what you did. I wasn't putting Kodi or whatever on there. I put the Peacock app because I guess that's the one thing that's bad about Roku and Amazon is that they get into these content pissing matches with the providers, and they can't work out a deal until the last minute, or it's been out for months. Apple gets everything the first day. So the Apple TV, that's one of the things where it does just work. You know, the Peacock was available day one. HBO Max, available day one. So that is a positive, but I had to...
Spotify, available day 3,000.
Hey, that's due to Spotify. That ain't due to Apple. That's Spotify whining. Daddy, they won't let me... Yeah, they will. They do it. Oh, well, we're still not going to build it. Yeah. That there is no excuse now for what Spotify, and they're crying and whining all the time that they do. They have the ability to build out for the HomePod. Amazon's doing it. iHeartRadio did it. What do you call it? Pandora did it, for God's sakes. Pandora. Nobody pays for Pandora, but it's there. You can actually put that as your paid music selection on a HomePod. You mean to tell me that Spotify couldn't do that? No, they can do it. They just don't want to. They don't. They're... hate affair with Apple won't allow them, but yes.
Well, you're talking about content disputes. This is the second time in DirecTV in the last 60 days that I've lost channels. So there was a big dispute with NBC, I don't know, 2 months ago, and so we didn't get to see like a lot of the last Alex Trebek Jeopardies or anything like that, like completely lost SNL and some of the football games and whatnot that were on NBC. And so today we lost ABC. So apparently there's a dispute with Cox Media and Cox Communications that DirecTV and AT&T, at least in Atlanta, no longer get ABC.
So here's where I'm going to recommend you go out and get a cheap Leaf antenna, stick it in your attic, and get the Channels app for Apple TV. So you get that, a home run tuner. And you can watch over the air, all the over the air stuff that we get in Atlanta, you can see on your Apple TV as a TV channel. You'll never be subject to this crap ever again.
Nice. Maybe send me a telegram.
I have a home run tuner in a box somewhere. Sure. I'll sell you.
What's that, Jim?
I have a home run tuner in a box I'm not even using. I'll sell you pretty cheap. I think they cost about $100 back then, but it's just literally in like one of these bins over here that I used it when I lived downtown. But I don't use it anymore.
If you're running Plex at home, you can actually set up a DVR trivially easy. So your HD home run can actually record over the air to your DVR inside of Plex, giving you the ability to watch over Plex. They can skip intros. They can skip commercials.
That's awesome.
You can even have it go post-process and cut out commercials automatically. I mean, it's you'll never be subject to the whims of the broadcast disputes ever again if you do this. One of the best things I did was back in 2016, I did this. And since I wasn't using cable anymore, I had my electrician, when he put the antenna in the attic, run it through the coax into my master bedroom. And that's where the HD home run has been sitting ever since. And then it just, you know, for years, I even built my parents a VPN when they wanted to watch some of the playoff games a couple years ago that they were out of market for. So I got my mom to install a VPN profile on her iPad. That's how badass I was. Got her to install a VPN profile on her iPad. She streamed the game over my internet connection back to Mississippi and then airplayed it to the Apple TV so that she could watch out-of-market, I think it was NFC games.
That's awesome. I did that with a buddy 1 year for MLB baseball. He was a Red Sox fan. And so I'd VPN to him and watch Braves games, and he'd VPN to me and watch Red Sox games. But, of course, their algorithms and... detection stuff got a whole lot smarter over the years, and they figured that out.
Yeah, they checked to see if you're running a VPN. But since this was over the air, they couldn't catch me doing the encoding on the fly and sending it over. So I'll send you links to do it. It's you're probably going to be like maybe a little over $110, $115 out of pocket, but it'll be so much better when you're able to do it. Because, again, there's a lot of channels. I didn't realize this because I honestly don't watch a lot of TV. I talk a big game, but I don't watch a lot of stuff, especially the last few months. But every once in a while, I do watch something over the air. There's tons of these little micro channels I had no idea about that I was going through. And I recorded the entire run of the Drew Carey Show off of Laugh TV over the air using my Plex DVR last summer. I think I did Night Court like that, too. Like, just, oh, I want that series. I'm going to record every single episode every single day at this time and then cut out the commercials and Bob's your uncle. So, yeah, I do really, really weird stuff like that. But, yes, I'll show you how to do it. It's trivially easy and way cool. The last thing, we've been recording about an hour, so it's a good, almost a good stopping point. The other day over our Telegram chat, we were talking about the new M1s, M1 Mac Minis specifically. I've been trying to goad Jim into buying one for a while, and he hasn't taken the bait. So Amazon has had a nice discount on both of the 256 model and the 512 model. They're both $50 off, which, you know, for Apple products, is actually pretty good, especially when it comes to Macs that are brand new and just came out like a month ago. So I broke down today and ordered a M1 Mac Mini 512 that should be here, according to Amazon, in March.
Huzzah!
But it was only $849 as opposed to the $899 from Apple, so we'll see. 8 gigs of RAM, but that processor, I'm really wanting to see if I can, you know, I can really tax Plex and Handbrake with some of the things that I've been doing with those multiple cores and see how fast that custom processor really, really is.
So is all the software you use going to support it? Or, I mean, do you think you'll be using the Rosetta more so? I mean, that's what I was looking at, and I'm just wondering, you know, how long do I wait for people to upgrade their software? I mean, I know I could make it work, but...
So allegedly the Rosetta 2 works really, really well from what I've read. The biggest thing that I'm worried about is the Adobe suite of products. I do plan on putting that on the M1. Now, I do know, based off the reviews I saw with MBKHD and, you know, seeing how, I think the Adobe stuff is what he put through the ringer with, like, Photoshop and stuff like that. And he said it was still noticeably snappy. Like, it, you know, it didn't seem to suffer. You know, Adobe will be taking advantage of that pretty fast. So doing things in Premiere Pro, I want to see how fast that I can actually render video, how fast, you know, I can actually transcode things on the fly. Those CPU intensive operations I'm really looking forward to giving a shot to, because again, my iMac is from 2015 now, so it's getting along in the tooth. It's getting about time to replace it. And again, I almost started to just wait and see, well, maybe they'll do an M1 iMac and then I'll, but you know, I should probably wait to an M2 or something like that before I go down the iMac path, because I do tend to keep the iMac 6 or 7 years usually. My gaming PC is still pretty strong, but you know, again, it's from 2016, so it's time to maybe get rid of this GTX 1080 and get something a little bit stronger from the video card perspective, maybe update that i7 to something a little more powerful. You know, I mean, I should really put some effort, again, when I have the time or finances, to upgrade my gaming PC, but this is a way to sort of supercharge my computing right now for not a lot of money, so it seemed too good of a deal to pass up. So any of you guys plan on taking the plunge either from the MacBook Pro, the MacBook Air, the Mac Mini?
I'm definitely going to get a Mac Mini.
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
And I'm probably going to get a MacBook Pro when the M2 comes out. Or even if it's not an M2, even if it's just the, you know, laptop redesign that's expected this year with an M1. I think my MacBook Pro is like a late 2014, so it's probably due for an upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, I've still got a 2017 MacBook Pro that I'm doing, you know, that's what I'm recording on now, and it's got the crappy keyboard, you know, but it still runs great. But you know, I wouldn't mind the Mini to give it a shot, and it's not a daily driver for anything. So I mean, I get a computer from work for that stuff. So, yeah, I'll eventually do it, but I'm gonna let you troubleshoot all the stuffs first, Brian. And then that way I can just ask you, you know, hey, how do I make this run?
Yeah, there are some trade-offs that I'm kind of worried about. I mean, I won't even upgrade to Big Sur on my iMac here where I'm recording the podcast simply because I know that my Drobo probably isn't supported. I've seen glitches in Big Sur where, you know, one of the things that we relied on in the past, we're all, I think most of us here own Trip Mode, the excellent program that you can put on your MacBook Pro that will allow you to watch your bandwidth when you're traveling. There's a glitch right now that's been there since Big Sur was released where a security prompt is supposed to pop up in security preferences and it doesn't do it and you can't make it do it. So that software is effectively rendered useless to me because I can't install the version that supports Big Sur because the dialogue that I'm supposed to click on doesn't exist currently for whatever reason. It's there. Apparently it's there, but it's hidden and you can't touch it and you can't alter it. So it might as well not be there. You know, little things like that. So, like this Mac is probably going to only ever run Catalina because I have no compelling reason to upgrade because if I do, I don't think there's drivers in Big Sur that would support my Drobo. So until I make the switch to QNAP like Brad, I'm kind of stuck. But yeah, my MacBook Pro is on Big Sur and I'm looking forward to doing this with Big Sur and being able to load iOS apps on a Mac is going to be pretty wild. Like I see that as being a very sort of exciting prospect. I know they broke the ability to sideload iOS apps into macOS. I think maybe they turned it back on. I don't know, but that was a thing you could do for a while. If the developer didn't want you running it on macOS, you couldn't run it on macOS.
So completely random question. Every time I hear Drobo, I think circa 2006, maybe 2005, the Cali Lewis video podcast. Do you remember that? Drobo was like the first main sponsor for that. I was just curious if anybody knew what ever happened to her.
No, but I can tell you Drobos are terrible products in general. So back in about May or June, I had one die. It's still sitting on the floor over here. And it goes into what is known as just this boot loop of death. And I have 12 terabytes with a 4 terabyte hot spare. So, I mean, I have tons of movies, TV shows, my entire Blu-ray collection, you know, lots of stuff on this that, you know, and I back up to Backblaze, which thank God for that. But you couldn't buy this model anymore. And one of the things that's frustrating about the Drobo is even in between models, they have this proprietary thing they call Beyond Raid. So you can't just take the disk array and stick it in some other system and use it. So I was going to have to buy a comparable model, but the more recent version, and you have to keep the discs in the same order. So like when I'm taking them out of the Drobo, I'm like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, like just making sure that they're labeled. So I know which order to put them back into. And you know, because of COVID and everything, you couldn't get even the new versions. And I would go to eBay to buy the version that I already had. I'm like, okay, this thing is like 5 years old. Certainly somebody out there has one of these for sale. No, they didn't. They were all dead. For parts. I'm like, oh my God. And thank goodness again, as always, for Reddit. Because I was able to go to the Drobo subreddit. I found a guy in the Navy in South Carolina who had one to sell. And he sold it to me for a reasonable price. So I'm using his Drobo. He sent it to me. And that thing, he must have stored it in the desert. Like it was just dust everywhere. Caked everywhere. Like I was like, oh please God for this thing. I hope this thing works. So I used like a can of, you know, the thing. And I'm cleaning it out. I'm, you know, with Q-tips and put all the drives in and everything worked. So good for now. But whenever I have to, if this dies again, it's going to get replaced with a QNAP. And I guess I'll be spending several days from Backblaze or paying for some big hard drive restore of everything to get it back. But yes, I can't wait for the M1 to arrive, but it may be March, so it may not be for a couple of episodes yet before I get to talk about it. Or with Amazon, a lot of times stuff comes in quicker than expected, so we'll see. You guys will know as soon as I get it.
It's here. The new phone books are here.
I've been published.
Our friend of the show, Broomrand, got one for Christmas, and he loves his. He talks about it on Telegram.
Yeah, he got a MacBook Air, did he not?
Yeah.
You guys certainly love some laptops, let me tell you.
Well, I'll tell you, the next technology purchase I'm thinking about tinkering with is getting the Unify home telephone and using VoIP for my desk. I would like to have a landline at the house, just something in addition to the cell phone. And so it's $10 a month. So...
Is this something you've seen on the EA store, or is this some product?
Yeah, so it's on the EA store. They got like a awesome phone that would allow me to view my Unify cams at all times, as well as it be voice over IP, as well as a Bluetooth receiver for my iPhone. So it kind of gives me a desk speaker phone that I could use either voice over IP or dial out on my iPhone with. And it's $10 a month for 3,000 US, Canada, and Mexico minutes.
So why do you want a landline again?
Just because I'm sitting at a desk all day at home most of the time.
I gotcha. I do most of mine over the internet calling now. I don't even...
Yeah.
Well, so the problem for me is our VPN bandwidth to work is only like 50 meg. So you get, you know, a bunch of people, and we've only got three VPNs for 3,000 people, right? So, and one of those is in Idaho or Iowa, one's in Texas, and one's in California, right? So the closest VPN to me in Georgia is Texas, and it's only 50 meg. Like, literally, when we have an all hands call, it will tell you at the start of it, please disconnect from VPN and use your own connection for WebEx.
That is terrible.
Oh, and big shout out to Mr. Idle for supercharging my Wi-Fi at the house. He remotely logged in, tweaked some of the settings on my APs, and I went from like the fastest I'd ever downloaded on my iPhone was like 270 meg. And yesterday I hit 420 a couple of times. So
420, yeah, 420. For that. He is great.
Very
nice. He fixed the meshing issue that I had a couple months ago. He logged in remotely. Fixed the I was meshing to the basement from the front porch, and that was kind of stupid. And I could not break that connection whatsoever. He got it fixed, and it's meshing to the pantry and the upstairs bedroom, as it should be. So made my doorbell connection even better.
What's your hourly rate, Brad?
Well, for you guys, it's free.
Yeah, I mean, but
for the rest of the internet, it's $125 an hour. For the rest of the world, it's $125 an hour.
Brad's going to be our first sponsor. Networking by Brad.
Well,
for people who can't network.
Well, Brad fixed my meshing issue too, right? Because I heard you talking about yours, and I was like, Brad, you know, maybe you need to check out my mesh. And I've never tweaked it or anything. And he calls me up. He's like, hey, dumbass, looks like all your APs are hardwired. You don't use mesh. I was like, oops.
See, I'm not a big fan of meshes. And it's just, I had so many problems with a Ring doorbell, so many problems, that I took one of my spare APs that I had. I was going to put it in my father-in-law's middle of nowhere house. And I never made it out there with it. So I was like, you know what? I got a spare AP. I'm going to stick it right on the other side of the wall of the doorbell and just mesh it. And when I meshed, it just decided to pick what it thought was the closest one, which was, you know, on the other side of the house, separated through an entire floor. And I don't know why it had two better ones to pick from, but then once it meshed, it never would get rid of it. So it was a...
Well, you with the Unify stuff, you can set things to auto, and it'll be good enough usually, but you really can go in there and tweak some stuff and make it really perform and behave the way you want it to.
My wife did make a funny joke after I told her that you had tweaked it. She was like, yeah, I kind of been feeling like I'm getting more cancer lately.
Being bathed
you
in it.
You have a glow about you today, honey.
He turned up the radios on the APs to radioactive level. So all of my APs are hardwired except for that one node that's by the door.
I would always say don't mesh if you can help it. But, you know, if you don't have any other option, you know, mesh is always an option.
I spend a lot of time in the
right,
formal living room.
My dog is getting restless.
What happened to your dog?
She's getting very restless here. She I've kept her at bay as long as I could.
Fair enough. I think it's a good place to stop. I'm going to have a lot to edit. So let's just call it a show. So until next time, later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit InfiniteLoopBack.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopBack. That's at INFIN LoopBack. I'm Brian B. That's at BRIANB. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at BIGJIM. Jason is at JSNYNG. That's at JSNYNG. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at MEESTERIDLE. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.